coming up.
I remember one of the first docs I ever got was Britain's poshest brothel.
It's a lesson for life.
Because you don't want to frighten the rhino, do you?
Go back to your friends. Go on.
Insert your own. Insert your own. That's it.
He's gone old school with it. Very nice.
Could have gone further with that.
How do you say that?
Wasn't really a choice, was it? It was just me.
But I mean, the great thing about having no punctuation is that's the actor's dream.
I think it's a bit arch and a bit knowing.
Oh no, the J is silent.
Well, that wasn't very cheeky, love.
What a heathen thing to say.
There's stuff in there that I didn't know existed.
In the old days, you'd have a man literally doing it for you.
And now, enjoy the podcast.
How do you say that?
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 Hello and welcome to How Do You Say That, sponsored by BritishVoiceOver.co.uk. So this is Mark Rise.
Oh, that'll be me then.
Yes.
And that's Sam Boffin. Hello.
Hello, hello. So, How Do You Say That is the weekly podcast for voice actors where we get the chance to play around with real scripts and make choices and discover how different we all are when we come to voice these things.
Indeed, because there isn't just one way to read a script. There are lots of different ways. So, Sam, let's begin with a bit of true or false before we get into the scripts. My favourite Disney cartoon character is Tigger.
He's not,
bouncy, bouncy,
he's
bouncy.
Not a Disney cartoon character.
Well, they made a Disney. Yes, I mean, yes, you see
okay.
Disney.
He's well,
at
yes,
Disney.
Okay, I think he probably is, but yes. Go on.
No, he's not. I just knew someone with a Disney tattoo.
So I've
got
that's a different
many
thing
other favourites.
Altogether.
Indeed, absolutely.
Okay. All right, then. So, Mark, my job every morning, apart from Sundays, is to go out and buy fresh bread from the bakers down the road. Is that true or false?
Do you know what? If you were living in rural France, then yeah, probably. But wow, surely there's a sliced loaf in there somewhere. No, I don't think you do that every day.
I do.
Do you?
It's exactly what I do, yes.
Wow.
And mind you, I do get them to slice it.
Nice. Well, that's good.
So you're right about the slicing.
Well, of course, we also have a very special guest with us this week, voice actor Carl Jenkinson. Hello, Carl. Welcome to How Do You Say That?
Oh, special guest. I love that title. Thank you. He's special.
He's very special.
Sam, let's find out a little bit more about Carl,
yes,
shall we?
Yes, we can. So, having worked as an actor for nearly two decades, Carl eventually added voice acting to his experience. And his first proper TV gig was as a last-minute stand-in for Phil Tufnell, narrating I'm a Celebrity.
Wow.
Followed by Battle of the Brides, Call Me a Cabbie and Mean Machines, to name a few. In the early 2000s, Carl was cast in The Getaway, Back Monday for Sony, a video game with cut scenes and in-game voicing.
Well, add to that e-learning, TV and radio commercials and audiobooks. Carl can be heard on Audible narrating the award-winning The Governor, The Life and Times of Lenny McLean, Inside Broadmoor, Belmarsh and Wakefield, there's a theme developing there, Evil Beyond Belief, The Babes in the Wood Murders, The Rude and the Refined, it well, just about sums him up, doesn't it? Carl, have you got a fun fact for us, please?
Well, Rude and Refined, well, my fun fact is I am a fully qualified telescopic forklift handler driver.
Wow.
Yeah. You weren't expecting that were you?
That sounds like fun. It sounds like fun driving one of those big machines around.
It is, yeah. I said, I want a big one. They said, take that one over there. So, yeah. You know, obviously, as an actor, there are many times where you're not working as an actor. So, you know, I found myself working a few building sites and got trained on one of those beasties. So, yeah, that's a fun fact.
And with the hum of the big machines, let's look at the first script of our show, shall we? And ask, how do you say that?
How do you say that?
So this is a little script for a company I work with quite a lot. I've done ads for them, but this is a corporate.
It looks like high-end watchmaking, and I'm already thinking luxury, luxury, luxury.
Yes. It's they're watch winders, actually. They which I didn't
really
know.
It's like a mechanical wrist. It just keeps moving round and round.
It is literally a mechanical wrist. And
I have sold those on television.
Have you?
It's interesting. You put the automatic watch on it, and it does. It winds it for you. Yeah. I understand where you're going with this.
When they first employed me, and it was to do an advert for them, I hadn't got a faintest idea what a watch winder was. And I had to, you know, kind of, I had to look it up. And because I thought they were taking the mickey, actually. This is not their name. I've changed the name. And I thought they were taking the mickey. But in fact, they weren't. And I've gone on to do quite a few things for them since.
I was going to say, it's amazing, really, that such things exist. Because, you know, there's a thing called a battery now. They put that inside the watch and it just stays going, you know.
For an automatic watch, Carl. What a heathen thing to say. It's like, good Lord, these are high-end watches. pictures with the automatic movement in there, and the movement is on kinetic energy. Need the kinetic energy to keep going.
You need a lot of wrist action to keep it going.
There are whole cabinets of these wrists.
Yes.
That's what I can't get over. So whoever has these expensive watches doesn't just have one or two.
Oh, no.
They have dozens of them, presumably, to go with various outfits or something.
They probably have a man.
Yeah.
A man, yeah.
It's my wrist man. I mean, single winders, collector cabinets, is all there. I mean, you know, the world is your oyster, perpetual.
Isn't it? Absolutely. Well, I think I'm going to try and take it down the luxury line. And I think for me, that means slowing it down. And I think it means a slightly softer delivery. But let's have a look what I come up with to start with. You might love it. You might not. Let's see.
Okay.
For generations, Fenris has defined excellence in watch care, combining heritage craftsmanship with modern engineering. We create more than watch winders. We create guardians of time. From single winders to full collector cabinets, every piece is designed to keep an automatic watch running perfectly to time when it's off your wrist. A mechanical watch is a living machine, and like all precious instruments, it deserves proper care.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm in. I'm all in. I love the fact that they create guardians of time.
I know.
Oh, yes.
I
mean, what a line.
I mean, these things are not only they winders, but they're sort of armed and dangerous.
Indeed. In the old days, you'd have a man literally doing it for you. Mm. That sounds wrong, doesn't it?
Yes, on many levels.
Keep that wrist moving.
Yes, it.
So yes. Let's bring this back.
Yes.
So what did I think? Yeah, I thought it was lovely. I have to say there were a number of things, but I'm not going to go into them right now. But one of the things I wondered was, did it feel slow to you? That you
it deliberately felt slower slowed it down? Than normal.
Okay.
To me.
Okay.
Obviously not to you.
Well, no. On the contrary, it actually felt a tad slow.
Oh, okay.
You're going to take that, aren't you, and go,
I went too far the other way, but I'm going to take that as a win, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. I mean, I think so anyway. I think it was slightly slow. They wanted a bit of cheeky personality in this.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, as opposed to straight corporate, I think.
In which case I made way too much of a meal of Recreate Guardians of Time. And actually, with a cheeky note, you would say that entirely differently.
Yeah.
But I think that's an interesting note, but you always keep things like that to yourself.
Well, I'm nervous because what makes me nervous is that when I do it, you'll go, that wasn't very cheeky, love. Could have gone further with that.
Could have pushed yourself a little there.
A little cheekier.
Yeah.
So that would be the two pieces of feedback I'd give you.
Yeah. Carl, it gives you another directorial note to work on, though, to be able to get a kind of cheeky push in there somewhere. Yeah. I'd love to hear what you're going to do with it.
Yeah, I mean, I know where I would go if it was cheeky. I mean, I must admit, probably like you, I was kind of going for the epic read with lots of space around it. But maybe a bit, you know, let's do something. let's do something different. Yeah, let's do it.
Bit of cheeky coming.
Yeah. Right, okay. For generations, Fenris has defined excellence in watch care, combining heritage craftsmanship with modern engineering. We create more than watch winders. We create guardians of time. From single winders to full collector cabinets, every piece is designed to keep an automatic watch running perfectly to time when it's off your wrist. A mechanical watch is a living machine. And like all precious instruments, it deserves proper care.
Ooh. I got quite cheeky-chappy at the beginning of that. It's like, all right, guys, have a listen to this.
And there was a real hushed, kind of intimate kind of look. You and I both know that you need this kind of thing. So, you know, you were speaking to already converted people in many ways. So
totally.
I really liked that. I really liked the fact that it felt both of us together kind of thing. Kind of
letting you into a secret almost.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
They don't know. They're not supposed to know about this, but you can.
Yes.
You're part of our special club.
I think that's the great thing with good scripts and good commercial reads, actually, is that thing that you've got something to impart to people that this is actually worth a moment of their time. So, maybe that does work. I mean, because it's not the way I would have done it. I would have been more the way towards, the way Mark had done it with something a bit more epic.
Yes.
Definitely.
Because on the page it reads like that, actually. It reads more epic on the page until you're given that kind of specific direction. Interesting.
It had that kind of conversational intimacy that I really liked. And I think it would have felt very good in terms of on that kind of one-to-one level, because in all probability, this is not going out to hundreds of people, this is going out to one person. So it felt very personal in that sense.
I was almost expecting a wink-wink on We Create Guardians of Time, and it didn't come. Yeah. It didn't quite come. You saved the wink-wink for when it's off your wrist, interestingly. And I might have done that a little bit earlier with that note, so I'm interested to see where Sam kind of puts the kind of slightly cheekiness in there.
Exactly. We've given her the space. Exactly.
Okay, well... Yes, it's going to be interesting what I do with it, because it's a little bit more of a character. It's a character that I've already done in a few commercials for them. I think it's a bit arch and a bit knowing, but okay. I'll let you make your mind up, actually. Okay. For generations, Fenris has defined excellence in watch care, combining heritage craftsmanship with modern engineering. We create more than watch winders. We create Guardians of Time. From single winders to full collector cabinets, every piece is designed to keep an automatic watch running perfectly to time when it's off your wrist. A mechanical watch is a living machine, and like all precious instruments, it deserves proper care.
Oh, Sam, a mechanical watch is... a living machine. Yes, I mean, you took us to a precipice, then made us fall off it, and then picked it up. I really liked that. It was. I see where the wink is, and I also saw the slightly posh character.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it wasn't the kind of read that I would normally do, and left to my own devices, I wouldn't have necessarily done it. But I've got actually on my website the advert that I did for them, which is even archer than that. And you'll get a feeling, if you bother to go and look at it, you'll get a feeling for how over the top the advert was and how they wanted that, but a little less so for this.
It's interesting because you sort of think a mechanical watch, or when they call it a mechanical watch, is such a sort of a premium piece.
Mm.
Yes. I suppose the obvious thing is to do it in a slightly different way, but
yep.
A mechanical witch is a living machine. It certainly is.
Play How Do You Say That?
Remember, these are real scripts we're working on. We have changed some names and some details to avoid copyright issues. You can find both the scripts that we're using today in the show notes of the episode, wherever you're listening, whether it's Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Spotify, Podbean, or YouTube, perhaps.
So, Carl, tell us a bit about your script. Your script's quite different.
Oh, yes. Now, you can tell it's a script because...
Oh, it's on a bit of paper.
It's on a piece of paper.
Mine's on a screen.
No. You see, it's very difficult to write on a screen.
Actually, I suppose now it's not.
But, I like to mark up my scripts. Mm.
Yes.
Old school.
Old school, yes.
Yeah, so this is a little excerpt from a series of books that I've done, which are steampunk mysteries. This one is from the first book, which is called Steam, Smoke and Mirrors by... Colin Edmonds, who was a comedy writer at the BBC for people like Bob Monkhouse and the like, and he's a great guy, and he's written this series of steampunk novels, and they're full of sort of weird and wonderful characters, and if you know anything about the steampunk universe, it's always as fascinating as the sort of Jules Verne, Victorian, advanced civilization society. So it's got sort of elements of sort of modernism to it, and a bit of time travel and a bit of mystery. And
it's
good fun. Good fun. Lots of characters, lots of character voices, lots of eye action.
Obviously, we're only taking a paragraph or so here. What I noticed straight away was I don't think there's very much punctuation here.
Yeah. Mm. I mean, actors and punctuation, they tend to kind of ignore it a little bit anyway, because it sort of gets...
To make it their own.
Well, yeah, exactly. It sort of kind of gets in the way sometimes. And I mean, obviously with sort of prose, it's a bit different. It needs to make some sense, but it gives you a chance to put your own kind of spin on it. But you, you know, you need to know the material, because you can't just turn up and just think you're going to sight read it without, you know, at least getting to grips with it a bit.
Carl, technical question for you. You said that the narrator was another character. What can you tell us about
them? No, don't ask that. they're going to say they're
going first.
Deep
that's why I'm asking.
And
I don't want
to do so. Don't ask that.
In this particular story, the narrator is the... he is the diarist. He's the scribe who is relating this incredible tale. It's kind of rooted in an element of believability in the first place, even though the story is fantastical.
Okay.
Well, Sam, good
okay,
luck with
I should
it.
See what I make of this then.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, Lot, with me,
he shouted in full Scots brogue, and led a posse of boys in blue with black moustaches and matching truncheons, who were, at last, converging on the battlefield from all directions. The two failed assassins, the first was later described in witness reports as small, thick-set and brutish, wearing a baby's bonnet and trying to hold his face together, the second as tall, bloody of face, apparently female, and nursing her testicles, scrambled to make good their painful escape in an easterly direction down Bell Street.
Oh, I followed that. That was quite quick for you, I thought. And but it really worked within the prose that we had there.
Yeah. No, that was good. Yeah, it was great.
Okay.
I'm not sure the text makes any more sense to me now than it did when I just kind of skim read it, to be honest with you.
It feels like quite an interesting moment,
yes.
You know, I think, in the story.
Like you say, it's a very out of context piece.
Yeah.
And it's quite difficult to make sort of much sense of what's really going on. But yeah, I mean, it's I was listening, you know, I was engaged in what was going on. So that, you know, that's great.
There is a difference between doing, you know, I was going to say a punk rock. It's not punk rock, was it?
Steampunk, punk rock, you know, yeah, whatever.
There is a difference between doing a steampunk than there would be doing, you know, a naturalistic contemporary novel, like a Sally Rooney novel. Yeah. But there's a difference between it. And consequently, you're a lot more delicate, perhaps, with the narration in something like a Sally Rooney,
as opposed to
something like this.
The narrator is definitely RP and sort of high-end in that regard. You know, it's...
So sheer luck, actually, from my point of view.
So Sam's choice was good. I was going to say it was a choice, Sam. There we go. I was going to give you that.
It wasn't really a choice, was it? It was just me.
Okay. I have now got a picture of Johnny Rotten doing it in my head when you mix steampunk and punk rock.
I'm actually... I'm pogoing. There you go.
And rather well, too. Nice. Love your pogo on. How'd you say that?
Stop putting it off, Mark. You've got to do this.
I know. Oh, I have got to. Yes. Okay. Let's see where it goes then. Right. Hey, Yuzlaw, with me, he shouted in full Scots brogue, and led a posse of boys in blue with black moustaches and matching truncheons, who were at last converging on the battlefield from all directions. The two failed assassins, the first was later described in witness reports as small, thick-set and brutish, wearing a baby's bonnet and trying to hold his face together, the second as tall, bloody of face, apparently female, and nursing her testicles, scrambled to make good their painful escape in an easterly direction down Bell Street.
That was a good Scottish brogue.
Wasn't it, though?
Wasn't it,
that was great.
Did it go downhill from there?
No.
But the nice thing is it didn't bleed in, because you think once you start down the route of something quite strong, there's a more than good chance it would be, "Yous lot with me," he shouted in a full Scots.
Yeah. It could be very easy to do that.
Exactly,
you're right.
That's one of the dangers, that stuff bleeds from one into the other.
I find sentences like that, so the two failed assassins scrambled to make good their painful escape, with that giant bit of description in the centre, you can really lose the sense of the sentence. I hope that the sense of the sentence was still there.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Oh, what a big parenthesis, he said.
Yes, exactly.
Well,
that.
From
one,
somewhere
off
stage.
It's a huge parenthesis.
I've never seen a parenthesis quite as long as that, I have to say.
My concern was, were we still following the story?
Yes, I think so. Absolutely. It's funny, well, certainly it might just be me. When I'm listening to audiobooks, I'm getting the sense of a drama playing out or I'm getting a sense of a scene, I don't necessarily hear and listen to every single word, actually. Sorry, audiobook narrators, and I'm one of them. But you don't. What you're doing is you're listening to the overall sense, the pictures that it gives you in your head.
Yes, the pictures, absolutely. And I have to say, I mean, as a piece of prose, it draws the picture really nicely.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Yeah, I think it's easy to kind of lose the odd word, but it's the sense, as always with any of these things, it's the sense of emotion or drive behind the prose that takes you along in the script.
And it's why the more we can see it as the reader, the more we can actually visualise what's happening in our heads, the better it is going to sound coming out of our mouths, or hopefully, because we have the idea, we know we're running the movie, so and we're just telling you the movie.
Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, Carl, I mean, the time has come. I don't know whether it's going to be massively different to what you've heard. I suspect it might be.
Okay, fair enough. Hizla, hui me! He shouted in full Scots brogue, and led a posse of boys in blue with black moustaches and matching truncheons who were, at last, converging on the battlefield from all directions. The two failed assassins, the first was later described in witness reports as small, thick-set and brutish, wearing a baby's bonnet and trying to hold his face together, the second as tall, bloody of face, apparently female, and nursing her testicles, scrambled to make good their painful escape in an easterly direction down Bell Street.
I loved that. Ooh. I loved the lightness of your voice. And it really was. It was almost up half a register. And that took me into storytelling mode really quickly. It was also much faster than I had been expecting you to do it.
Yes, because this is follows on from an action scene where the two assassins, you know, have come at the main characters with the guns, and there's been lots of, you know, sort of, you know, firing and sort of, you know,
the excitement was there. It really brought it. I really liked that.
What I was fascinated to hear actually was that you almost made the narration part into a piece of dialogue.
Yes.
So you put humanization in there, and it felt like an actual conversation. So I don't know if it is reportage, as it were, within the context of the book anyway, but it felt like you were talking about this, not just narrating this, like really having a conversation with me about it.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Which was really interesting. There wasn't a narrator feel to you. There was a person feel to you. There was an actual character.
I think the interesting thing is when the book opens up, he is talking directly to the audience, directly, you know, to you, and telling you exactly what's coming and what's, you know, what's happening. And that sort of permeates throughout the book. It's like literally a sort of, and then this happened, and describing it. And then you break into the scenes, which is, you know, which is great.
Well, I tell you what, let's move to the wild card section of the show, shall we? This is where it can all mix up in so many different directions, Carl.
Okay. I'm intrigued.
We're all intrigued. So Carl, if you could choose one of the scripts and give one of us something different to do with it.
The thing that I think might be quite fun with the first script is to do it like a wildlife documentary. Ooh, you know, not necessarily Attenborough, but the fact that we're going down that route. Let's see how that works out.
And which one of us would you like to do that?
Mark, let's give it a go.
All right. So, watch craftsmanship, but as wildlife documentary.
Yes. A sort of a Blue Planet, you know, that,
yes,
that kind of thing.
Oh, I've got it in my head. All right. Okay. For generations, Fenris has defined excellence in watch care, combining heritage craftsmanship with modern engineering. We create more than watch winders. We create guardians of time. From single winders to full collector cabinets, every piece is designed to keep an automatic watch running perfectly to time when it's off your wrist. A mechanical watch is a living machine. And like all precious instruments, it deserves proper care.
Ooh, what was happening in your animal documentary, your nature doc?
The watch was like a rhino. I kind of saw a rhino.
It was grazing on the Serengeti.
Indeed, absolutely.
I could see it.
I think I went more whispered than I had intended to.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, it fell more that way. And of course, unless you're talking Attenborough, modern wildlife documentary has moved away from that.
Yeah.
A bit.
Yes, but it was.
So I think I fell down that rabbit.
I don't
hole.
Know. I think you did intimate actually more than whispered. I didn't hear whispered particularly.
Okay.
But I did hear that. The cadence that is often used, where we kind of speak it in short little sentences, short little.
Because you don't want to frighten the rhino, do you?
Yeah, no, so or the watch winder, you know.
Exactly.
Well, quite.
Okay, Carl, I want you to be a terrified daredevil, a kind of skydiving instructor who's afraid of heights, or a bomb technician who's nervous and jumpy. But I want you to do your script.
Okay.
Ooh, that's tough with your script, Carl.
I think he can take it.
I'm absolutely sure he can.
Right.
Yous lot! Wi' me! He shouted in full Scots brogue and led a posse of boys in blue with black moustaches and matching truncheons who were at last converging on the battlefield from all directions. The two failed assassins. The first was later described in witness reports as small, thick-set and brutish, wearing a baby's bonnet and trying to hold his face together. The second is tall, bloody of face, apparently female and nursing her testicles, scrambled to make good their painful escape in an easterly direction down Bell Street.
So good.
I love it.
So good. The little breaks in your voice as well.
Absolutely. Sam, I've got one for you. I would like you to imagine a very fat woman and a very thin woman sitting opposite each other at a table.
Right.
The very fat woman, you, not in real life, obviously, are talking to the very thin woman, telling her about what's happening while you're stuffing your face with cake. You've got a cake and you are making the most of it. I think script two works quite well with this because you're telling the story, but you are gorging yourself while the thin woman is watching you do it.
Okay. So it's a real story. Okay.
Right. Yous lot with me, he shouted in full Scots brogue and led a posse of boys in blue with black moustaches and matching truncheons who were at last converging on the battlefield. On the two hands, the first was later described in witness reports. That's good. Thick set and brutish, wearing baby's bonnet and trying to hold his face together. The second is tall, bloody female, nursing her testicles. Scrambled to make good. They're painful. I'm usually the matching jam bell. Oh, gorgeous.
I don't know if you realise, but you created a classic Roald Dahl character there. And that was a beautiful piece. I really enjoyed that. It was funny, but it wasn't over the top. It was very genuine in the feel, I thought.
Yeah, I think it sounded like you'd finished most of a meal.
Yeah.
Yes. That cake was gone.
I took a bit of hers eventually.
Yeah, that's 30 seconds that went into sort of, a minute 15 of mastication.
I like it. Absolutely. People say, don't they, that it's really unpleasant hearing people eat. But the fact you weren't eating, you were acting the eating, I think actually added something there as well.
Yeah. It's a niche listen.
It is. People pay good money for that, listen, Carl.
Bordering on the ASMR. Well, as always, we've put the scripts in the show notes, so you can have a try yourself. You can stuff yourself full of cake doing it if you want. And if you'd like to see behind the scenes of How Do You Say That, we are all over TikTok and Instagram. Yeah,
and Facebook and YouTube too.
Indeed.
I'm not sure I want to be with that last read.
I definitely want to see that.
I want to see that, yeah. I'm looking for that straight away.
Okay. So, Carl, you've been a voice on a lot of reality docs. And when people think documentaries, they often think that a voice is just supporting the visuals. But presumably, you needed to create different personalities for those shows. So how does that work?
Yeah, it's quite interesting. One of the first ones I did was for Nat Geo, National Geographic, and it was a wildlife documentary about lions. And which wouldn't be, you know, my sort of traditional normal voice when I'm, you know, is estuary English, you know, sort of just, and I do a lot of geezers and blokey, you know, sort of, you know, every man, you know, that's mainly my thing.
Yeah.
And I said to the producer, and I said, you know, not being funny, but I thought it was maybe a bit of an odd choice. And he went, the trouble is, he said, these days people channel hop. He said, and they really just want to land on something. He said, we wanted a voice that sounded like they were sat next to them on the sofa having a chat.
Yes.
And that engagement obviously sort of moved away from the sort of the BBC kind of standoffish imparting information to more inclusive, more immediate. Yeah. Yeah. So that people wouldn't feel alienated. And then
you're my friend telling me this.
Yeah.
Exactly, yeah. And that's, in a way, that's kind of informed a lot of the reads that I've done, you know, throughout my career anyway, you know, when it's appropriate to do so, because that engagement allows people to kind of go, all right, yeah, we'll give it a go, because they've got lots of choices. And so, yeah, when doing things like Call Me a Cabbie and all the rest.
I was going to say, Call Me a Cabbie, I remember quite well. Yeah, yeah. Call Me a Cabbie, it was a very strong personality that you injected into that, but it absolutely suited that format of show.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean, that, Mean Machines, Rough Trades, any of those sort of things, they're the same thing, because, you know, from a commercial point of view, they are little bits of film that are kind of snipped together, and the thread, the oil that keeps it all there is the narration, is the voice.
Yeah.
It's kind of the show in a way. You know, and obviously with people like, you know, Dave Lamb and, you know.
It's exactly what Dave Lamb created for Come Dine With Me, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yes, it becomes, you know, the thing that, the hook that get people into, because if just watching the VT on its own, you know, there's obviously interest there, you know, but you need to have a thread, a common thread. And I think that that's where a lot of these programs actually do quite well, because.
Yeah,
sure.
You know, that's what they need. They do need that to bring it alive.
Do they allow you to put much of your own personality actually into it?
Yeah. I mean, when you go into the booth, obviously what they generally have, they've got a guide track, which they've recorded, which is a bit of a monotone anyway. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the sort of gags obviously sort of written in. So some of the stuff can be, you know, can work. Sometimes it's not. If it's a sort of a lower tier program, it might just be quite straight, in which case you get a little bit more latitude. Mm-hmm. Because the way you tend to narrate those things, you're watching them in real time. I don't know if you've ever done any, but you know, you've got a screen in the booth, light comes on, you say the script over what you're seeing or whatever it might be. So in a way, you're kind of in real time, a bit like Gogglebox, you're commenting on what you're seeing. So there's a, you know, if you're a conduit and you're naturally, you know, that stuff's going through you, it's going to come out with some of your personality coated on it.
Yeah.
That doesn't sound too...
Wanky is the word you're looking for, isn't
it? Wanky. Yeah, wanky. If it doesn't sound too wanky.
it doesn't, actually. We know what you mean.
You know, what you're buying when you buy a good voice is you're buying the way that voice sees the world. Because as we're talking about how do you say that, the reason that everyone says things differently is because we all have slightly different ways of viewing the world.
Yeah.
So if you just turn up and you just say the words... Effectively, that's reading out loud, and that's the sort of thing that most people can do. But if you can imbibe it with a bit of you, in whatever way that be, and it'll always be how, you know, like we were talking about the script I gave, you know, you said, oh, it was quite quick, or it was, you know, there were sort of pauses here, or, you know, you can colour it, and you might not have much latitude to do that, but you've got some latitude. And what might happen is that you might do that and the producer go, oh, actually, I like that bit. Let's cut that word. Let's do this. So I think that, you know, in a good production, it's collaborative. You're putting your bit in, and they should feed off that as well.
Yeah, and you can really enjoy the scripts that they give you. You get a real rapport going with you in the booth and them in the... Because it's often the person that's directing you is often the writer as well.
Yeah.
So that, you know, you get a real kind of feel for it. I remember one of the first docs I ever got was Britain's Poshest Brothel.
I can't imagine why you got that, Sam.
But we had such a laugh in it because, of course, you're commenting on it all the time and, you know, and all the girls had you know, crazy names. And
what was the address of that? Asking for a friend.
Carl. It was Chelsea Cloisters, actually. And we,
I know. I've heard of it.
We kept it as well. There were punters that were, you know, and I kept commenting on this punter that kept coming back, you know, and every time he kind of came back on screen, I'd say, and this is so and so. And it became, you know, and I've got similar things off the back of that because people like that kind of arch knowing but fun, you know. I enjoyed the whole you know,
yeah, and that comes across. I mean that, you know, if you're having fun, you're enjoying it, then you know, you can expect that the audience might also do the same thing. I mean, that's it's what they're paying for.
Carl, it's a great peep behind the curtain. Thanks so much for revealing it for us. A reminder that all of Carl Jenkinson's details can be found in the show notes of the episode.
Yes, of course, and the scripts are there too, so do check out our TikTok and Instagram accounts and share the love.
Yeah, share the love. That's it for this week. Thanks again to Carl Jenkinson. We'll be back next week with more scripts and another voiceover guest when we'll be asking,
How do you say that? How do you say that?